Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello, folks, and welcome to a brand new episode of Thanks for the Knowledge. This is FanBite's weekly news show, rounding up the headlines in games and entertainment in one handy podcast. I'm your host, head of FanBite Media, John Warren. I'm not even going to say I hope you had a good week, because honestly, things have been pretty bad around here if you live in the United States. So I'll just say let's take care of each other. And let's talk about video games. At least we still have that. I had a really, really amazing chance to talk to Jeff Gerstmann. You can't say Giant Bomb's Jeff Gerstmann or GameSpot's Jeff Gerstmann, because he's independent. And we talked about that. We talked about some of the best games of the year and things that he is looking forward to, as well as a renewed love of professional wrestling. That was an excellent conversation. But first, before we do that, we have to get to this week's top stories. The news is slowing down just a little bit, but we still have a lot to cover. There was a Nintendo Direct Mini third-party partner showcase this past week, and honestly, for a mini that lasted almost 28 minutes, there was actually quite kind of a lot to get to, so we should talk about some of it. The showcase started, of course, with a big rundown of Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak, which is out on PC and Switch right now. It actually came out on June 30th, so if you're interested in that, you should get your hands on it now. Our excellent senior managing editor, Nerium, has a first bite up on YouTube right now for Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak, which is probably worth your time. They liked it quite a bit and have played it a lot over the past month or so. So, that seems like a good one. Nintendo is proud of it, showed it off. So if you want to play it on Switch, you can. It's also available on PC. Also announced is the Nier Automata End of Yorha Edition. That is one of the best games of 2017. There were a lot of bangers in 2017, and that was a really good one. Coming to Nintendo Switch is going to be at 1080p on dock, but it will be locked to 30 frames a second, which makes a lot of sense because everyone was wondering how that's going to work. But it is a native edition. It is not a streamed cloud edition of this game. It is running right there on the Nintendo hardware, which is quite exciting. That is going to come out on October 6th. There are some exclusive Switch costumes and things like that. People are a little mad about that. They want those costumes everywhere, but you know what? Switch folks get them. There is a brand new kind of adventure game, classic adventure game called Lorelei in the Laser Eyes, which sounds like a band I used to see a lot when I went to school near Denton, Texas. You know, a lot of, you know, indie bands and stuff. You get it. From like the early 2000s. Anyway, it's coming out into 2023. It looks pretty cool. Annapurna is publishing that joint, and looks pretty nice. I like the way it looks. Got a cool art style, kind of shifts styles a few times. It's lovely. It's a lovely thing. We also got to see a little bit of Super Bomberman R2. That looks great if you're into Bomberman. Gosh, I mean, it's just really good. It's always good to see a Bomberman in the wild, and I'm glad we got to see a little bit of a Bomberman. Also, Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection something I know Nikki Grayson and a lot of other folks are super excited about. This is a package of all 10 Game Boy Advance games, Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Edition. I'm sorry, that's not Game Boy Advance. Those are DS games. I don't know why I said Game Boy Advance. I must be thinking of when I had to look up Ballistic X versus Sever for reasons that you don't need to know. And I had Game Boy Advance on the brain. Excuse me. These are DS games. They're popular, and a lot of people are really nostalgic for them. I love Mega Man. I never played a single one of these, but you know what? Now is a pretty good opportunity. They are releasing these kind of strangely. In case you don't know, the first two of these games are standalone titles, and then the next four entries of it are kind of split like Pokemon games. So basically split into two different categories with some very minor differences between them. So it's 10 games in total, but six generations, if that makes sense. So one, two, three, both of those, four, both of those, five, both of those, and then six, both of those. These look good. What's weird is that the physical package is going to come with all 10 of those in one package. But if you buy them digitally, it's going to come in two pieces. It's going to be one, two, and then both versions of three, and then both versions of four, both versions of five, both versions of six in a different one. I think that is strange. But that's fine. Pac-Man World Repack is a remaster of Pac-Man World. That's coming, I believe, next year, I think it is. And it looks like Pac-Man World, folks. There's a really gorgeous game called Blanc coming in February 2023. It looks like a minimal, basically no dialogue game, black and white, of a baby wolf and a deer trying to make it through a treacherous wilderness. It looks very sweet, looks very cute, kind of looks like a little bit of a journey. But yeah, that's looking good. Return to Monkey Island is looking pretty fantastic. We knew about this, back when it was first announced. Back in, I think it was April or right at the end of March, I believe. That's coming out this year, and it is actually a Switch console exclusive for the time being. It will come out to Nintendo Switch first. No word yet about when that's going to come to other console platforms, but it is at least going to be on Nintendo Switch first. The art style for the actual gameplay of this game looks very, very nice. If you saw the first trailer that announced the game, it looked kind of like maybe an animated non-game engine trailer, but the whole thing looks to be in the style. I think it's really unique. It is very, very different than the original games, and I think that's a good thing because I think the way it was is pretty dated. We didn't see any dialogue or hear any voice acting in this. Maybe it's just not done, but that is a big part of this. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops over time. But it is available this year. I think I said that already, but that's very exciting. Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope got a new trailer. They also got a showcase this week showing off some of the gameplay, things like that. That's pretty exciting. That was one of the better games for the Switch for quite a long time. And if you like XCOM and can tolerate at least minion-like rabbids, it's a pretty good game. You should check it out. Little Noah Scion of Paradise is a game that launched that day, back on Tuesday this past week. It is looks like a roguelite. I don't know if it's a gacha, but it is a collectible game where collecting characters to go through these little action levels. Looks nice. It's $15. I picked it up. I'm going to definitely check it out. Rail Grade is a railroad simulator coming to Switch. Looks very interesting. Looks very chaotic. If you like kind of building rail systems and puzzle solving, this looks like the strategy game for you. RPG time. The Legend of Wright is a very interesting looking hand-drawn art style RPG. Contrast that a little bit to the plucky Squire. That's a game I think looks a little bit better, a little bit more interesting. But this is a very cool game, a cool looking game at least. And I'll be excited to get my hands on that when it comes out. Sonic Frontiers got a trailer. They actually showed off some new locations aside from that big giant field and mountains that we've seen. That look pretty barren and weird. Some of the new locations look like original Sonic levels. So that's probably good news. A lot of us were kind of going, wow, you know, this isn't exactly the aesthetic and the vibe that we're going for with Sonic. But it appears that there are other levels besides that big open zone. So that's a good thing. Disney Dreamlight Valley is kind of a life sim that takes place in a Disney-fied world. Kind of imagine if like Kingdom Hearts and Stardew Valley had a weird kid and just kind of got rid of all the Square Enix stuff. Early access for this game will be available on Switch on September 6th. That's going to be a huge game, I bet. Live Alive is, of course, the game coming out on July 22nd, I believe. Let me double check that. But that is the new port of a JRPG from Square Enix that came out for the Super Nintendo back in the mid-90s. There is a demo out right now. You can play through parts of three chapters of that game. It's basically six different scenarios split in different time periods, things like that. In the demo, you can play through the Imperial China, Edo, Japan, and Distant Future. I played the demo Distant Future. There's not a lot of action in that, but a lot of, you know, interesting dialogue and little ship exploration. A Doraemon Story of Seasons, Friends of the Great Kingdom is a bit of a harvest, kind of harvest moon looking game. I did not hear great things about the first version of this game, but maybe this one will be better. And if you like Doraemon, then that's for you. Minecraft Legends got a new trailer for Nintendo Switch. We also got introduced to a game called Dragon Quest Treasures. It looks like a little bit more of like a collecting monsters and doing action RPG stuff and exploring kind of a big area. Not totally clear on the loop of this thing, but it comes out on December 9th. And I'll just say, Dragon Quest spinoffs are great. Dragon Quest Builders for Switch specifically, and Builders 2, excellent games. Two of the best games you can pick up on Switch. It's really, really good. We got a rundown of some other games like No Man's Sky, which is coming to Switch. Also, Plague Tale Requiem, which is a cloud version. That was kind of a neat showcase just to see a couple of the new games that are coming out soon. An announcement that I don't think anybody expected, but I'm certainly happy with, is the Portal Companion Collection. Yes, it is the Portal games, two of the best games ever made. Valve really outdid themselves. Those are available now on Nintendo Switch. You can go grab them. Those are two excellent games. If you've never played Portal for whatever reason, that now is a great time to do that because, gosh, those games are so, so, so good. We also got an announcement trailer for a game called Harvestella, which is a cool slice of life action game. It does look very Stardew Valley-like, but with a Square Enix flair. It is a full 3D game, a lot of high-quality looking environments. It's kind of like some cosmic evil encroaching on like an area that still needs its crops and its people to be happy and things like that. So it looks like it's mixing a lot of cool genres here. And it's available on November 4th. That's like low key one of those late year releases that I think might sneak up on us. It looks pretty cool. It's the first time we've heard about it. And we wrapped up with the news that a lot of people have been waiting for a long time, maybe too long. Maybe this is a bit of a late of an announcement, but it's still very exciting. Persona 5 Royal, Persona 4 Golden, and Persona 3 Portable are all coming to Nintendo Switch. That's very, very, very exciting. Persona 5 Royal will be available first on October 21st of this year. Golden and Portable don't have release dates yet. It just says coming soon. So That wraps up the Nintendo Direct of the week. Some bangers there. I mean, some really good stuff. I mean, Harvestella looks cool. Everyone should be excited about Persona 5 Royal if you haven't played it yet. Looks pretty good. By the way, Skate 4. Everyone's been asking, hey, where is that game? It got announced and then kind of forgotten about or something. But EA actually showed off the game in progress. I like what they're doing. They're doing this with Dead Space, and now they're doing it with Skate 4. They're showing really early development footage from these games. I think that's cool. I think that's kind of nice. And you know what? It looks janky, which is good. That's what we don't want a super polished skate game. We still need, you know, 15-minute supercuts of all the completely bonkers stuff that can happen in Skate. That video was great. We've posted a piece and some thoughts and that trailer over on fanbyte.com. Thank you, Funke, for putting those thoughts up. It looks great. They showed some of the new textures, too. This game still looks beautiful. But honestly, even if they kept it kind of in its pre-alpha, low-poly state, it's pretty dope. I don't know. I don't run EA. I mean, if I did, I probably wouldn't tweet stuff like she's at 10, but she only plays single player games like EA's social people did this week. That wasn't very smart. By the way, Blizzard, Activision Blizzard, they've got a big game called World of Warcraft. They've got a new expansion called Dragonflight. It's supposed to come out this year. And to help bolster the development effort for World of Warcraft, may not even be for Dragonflight, it might be for something else, Blizzard is acquiring, or is intends to acquire, it hasn't happened yet, Proletariat, the folks that made Spellbreak. Spellbreak is a battle royale game involving magic. That team is unfortunately stopping any sort of development, and that game will be off the market and servers shut down at some point this year. They announced that earlier this week, and everyone was sad about that because that's a cool game. It just didn't get a lot of traction. But then they announced that, hey, Blizzard's going to acquire us and we're going to get to work on World of Warcraft stuff. And it's 100 employees for Proletariat. That's a much, much, much larger studio than I think I realized. And so that's going to be an extra 100 folks working on World of Warcraft going forward. Presumably, they're really not working on Dragonflight because I would expect at this point Dragonflight's close to being done. But maybe they're working on a future expansion, future features that we don't know about. Maybe a port. Who knows? That's just rampant speculation. But Proletariat will get to work on World of Warcraft as soon as that acquisition is done. Some late breaking news on Friday as we're recording this. It appears, based on some LinkedIn profile updates, I love that as a source of news. People get so messy when they just post hiring things and new positions on LinkedIn. It's very funny. It appears that Bungie and NetEase, NetEase is one of the biggest tech companies in China. They're working on a ton of video games. They are working together on a first-person mobile game. So Bungie, the masters of the FPS, and NetEase, so one of the masters of highly monetizable mobile games. They're working on something together. We have to imagine that NetEase paid Bungie a lot of money to co-develop something. We have no idea. It's going to be on iOS and Android. That's really all we know at this point. But NetEase has got a ton of experience on mobile. Bungie has really never done anything super hard with mobile. So that'll be interesting. I don't know how all of these things interact with Sony, you know, like, it's just a very interesting development for me. You know, I guess Sony will at some point kind of own this large NetEase co-developed property. It's an interesting thing. But it appears that this is happening. We will probably get some sort of official announcement sometime soon, as those LinkedIn profiles usually predate news by a little while. But yeah, very interesting stuff. The news has otherwise been a little bit slower than usual, which is okay. I mean, I'm happy with that. We did see four new games added to the Sega Genesis lineup for Nintendo Switch Online. These four games just hit it on late Thursday evening. So one is Zero Wing, which is, of course, the game that All Your Base Are Belong to Us comes from. And if you don't know what that is, then congratulations on being in your early 20s. But that's kind of exciting, at least for the memes. Target Earth is a run and gun shooter. That's pretty straightforward. Comic Zone is a really cool, highly, highly interesting art style beat 'em up that came out on Genesis. It's very, very, very neat. It's not the best beat 'em up in the world, but it's pretty cool, at least with the style. You got to see it. And the Mega Man, the Wily Wars, which is a very interesting collection. It's the first three Mega Man games for Sega Genesis. They are 16-bit remakes of the original 8-bit game. So they have updated graphics, updated sound, and some other stuff. It is pretty cool. And if you beat all three of those games, you actually get a new zone with a new boss. So that's kind of interesting. That was one of those games that I was always interested in playing, but for some reason never did. I owned a Genesis. I don't think I treated my Genesis library very well. I have to admit that. I think I had a Genesis, and I told myself, yeah, I'm a Sega kid. I don't need no stinking SNES. But the entire time, I just think I was seething. I just wish I had had a Super Nintendo instead. I just didn't play a lot of Genesis except for like Streets of Rage. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. That really wraps up our top stories for the week. I'm going to take a little break. We're going to do a quick break to showcase another podcast here on the network. And then on the other side of that break is an interview with the one and only Jeff Gerstmann. I'm super excited for you to hear that. And we'll be right back. Hey folks, just interrupting the show real quick to tell you that as I'm recording this, it is my birthday. I turned 37 on Friday, July 1st. That's when I record the show and get it ready to go out every single Sunday with my producer, Paul. Instead of just promoting one podcast, I'm going to say a birthday present that you could give to me is just to tell your friends about any of our podcasts. That's Channel F. You love to see it. This show, Thanks for the Knowledge, Friends Reunion, Spawn on Me, Khalif's amazing show, and 99 Potions. Just tell a friend about one of those shows, why you like it, why they should listen to it. You know what your friends like. If you're thinking, all right, like my friend likes to laugh about stuff, then, you know, this week's episode of Friends Reunion is a real banger. We have something for everybody. General Games, 99 Potions, that does RPG stuff. We're a versatile group, and it would mean a lot to me if you would tell your friends about it. And if you can't do that, share it on Twitter. And if you can't do that, give us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you can't do that and you're just like, I don't like really talking to people about stuff, I just like listening to the podcast, that's okay. I just it would mean a lot if you would if you do that. If you do any of those things, it would be amazing. So I love our podcast very, very much. We would really appreciate any sort of good vibes you could send out to the world and to your friends about our wonderful podcasts. Okay, on to the next segment. My guest this week, you might know him from his many years at GameSpot. You might know him from his many years at Giant Bomb. And now you may know him as kind of running his own show over on Patreon. Very exciting to have for the first time on a Fanbyte production. It's Jeff Gerstmann.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Awesome. I'm doing well. It's great to be here. It's great to finally, we've been talking for a while about making this happen.
And here we are. I really appreciate the time. I really do. I know you're busy right now. And I want to start there because I mean you've left Giant Bomb. That happened that was 3 weeks ago? 4 weeks ago?
So it's been, I guess, about a month.
It's been a month, right?
Since I've been out. And then there was a 2 week window there where I was kind of sitting on my hands. So yeah, it's
wow.
Yeah,
so you had a gap because I was unclear about that. So there was a 2 week period where you were basically like setting stuff up.
And no, well, there's a 2 week period where I was like,
I got you.
Yeah, no, there was it was from the other end sure. on that one. So basically it was like, okay, I'm still technically an employee of this company. Yeah. And so I kind of can't set stuff up.
So it was a lot of reflection. You came in hot with something brand new. How did that go?
It went great. It's always hard to know. How that sort of stuff's going to go. You kind of kick the tires on it. Of course, you know, some other folks left a while ago and you kind of look at that stuff. And, you know, I looked at what Austin Walker had been doing, what Danny O'Dwyer had been doing, what Kind of Funny had been doing and all that sort of stuff. So it was really kind of, it was interesting because when we were building Giant Bomb and when we were building the premium aspect of it, there wasn't really a lot of stuff like that out there. We had run a premium subscription service at GameSpot back in the day called GameSpot Complete.
Right.
And it was so old that it was like, you get priority access to Quake servers. You know, it was like that kind of that kind of service. Like, you get fast downloads on patches for PC games.
Oh, God, I remember a lot of that stuff. Yeah. You get the call to actions on the website. It's like, hey, sign up for this. You'll get priority download. And I'm like, oh, wow. All right. Things and have that really
was
meaningful changed.
Then. It was, definitely. Yeah, yeah. And so there wasn't really a lot to look at and really the tools didn't exist. And that was really the exciting thing. But I mean, you know, as much as this was kind of set up very quickly, you know, I've been watching this landscape for, let's say, the past year and kind of seeing where it's all going or what exists, because there wasn't. You know, there wasn't Patreon. There wasn't like a way to like very easily set up your own. Kind of like, oh, how do I take a credit card? Like all the payment end of things, the paywall end of things. Like we had to have a very sharp engineering team to do all that work. And now you can just kind of do it for a cut of the proceeds from a company like Patreon or, you know, obviously like YouTube ad stuff and Twitch's ad split and all this other stuff. Like there's so many different platforms out there that you can take advantage of that it's a lot easier to just kind of get up and running. You know, the thing I would say is like, you could launch a podcast in like 12 hours. Like it doesn't, of course. You know, you can record it and get it online and start getting it added to services. iTunes and some of these other services like nothing, you know, and it's just crazy how far that stuff has come. So in the end, once I kind of made the decision about which way I was going to go, it was just kind of like boom, boom, boom. It was like the hardest part was deciding if I was going to name it or not.
Right. Yeah. Why was now the right time for this, do you think, for you?
Well, I think, I think that it's just kind of, why is it the right time? You know, I think it's something that, so I guess over the last month you could think of as like something that like took place over the last month, over the last year, or over the last 5 to 7 years.
Sure,
Of like, okay, you know, we started this as an independent operation and we sold it to CBS in like I think it was 2011 or I don't even remember what year it was. It was a while ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that dynamic changed then. And then that company we got spun off and sold to another company and that was the last year or so. And so, you know, those dynamics change and you look at situations, you look at like, what do I really want to do with my career? And like, do I really want to be reporting to another person?
I hear that.
And you know, at some point you kind of, you know, it's this whole thing of like, do you want to be a small part of a very large company? And can that company, and this is CBS, you know, this is, I'm not even talking about. And I won't be talking about the current
new ownership,
the new thing, but you know, but the whole thing of like, you know, a manager comes in and you explain to them why you exist and you make a bunch of pitches and then some of them go through, some of them don't. And then that manager moves on and you're like, okay, well, now we have to start all over with whoever they brought in to do it now.
You do have to. I want people at home to understand this. You have to justify your existence almost no matter what level you're performing at
yeah.
like on an endless loop, it feels like.
Yes. And so I've been through that loop four or five times since we sold the thing. And you're like, okay, am I going to do this again? And you're like, I don't want, I'm sick of that. I'm tired of doing that. Either, you know, it's like the iced tea, you know, either you believe all these hand grenades are good or you don't. That's all I've got, you know?
Yeah.
And so you go through that enough times and you're just like, man, Matt, so much time is wasted on this. And also, right. you know, I think there's a weird dynamic of like, you know, like these, like the concept of like the personality driven business. Sure. Right. And what do you, I think this is something, I suspect this is something Greg Miller ran into at IGN.
Yeah.
Was this notion of just like, okay, you know, what are you there to do? And what is the company, like, what is the company's mechanisms for, making employees happy. And yeah. that's the different things like, okay, we can give you a promotion. We can move you up. But it's like, I'm here to do this. I'm here to host podcasts. I'm here to cover video games. I'm here to produce that type of content as a personality.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to move up the corporate ladder into some kind of vanishing middle management role. Like it's just right. not why I'm there. And so yeah. like the number one lever that a lot of companies have to retain employees and stuff like that is just kind of null and void for what I think this type of job is. And so, yeah. you know, there comes a time where you're like, okay, well, how do you retain these employees? Especially yeah. in a personality driven business, you've got people that are going to break out and suddenly, you know, and this happens, I think, at these businesses all over the place, like someone breaks out and you're like, okay, well, we can't afford to keep them anymore.
Right.
And so, you know, they go out on their own and try to do their thing or whatever. But yeah,
it's a unique problem because, yeah, I don't think media companies by and large, especially corporate owned ones, have adjusted to kind of this new reality. There were these when I lived in LA, I remember there were these kind of like personality driven farms that would pop up.
Right. Yeah. Like a hype house almost. Kind of nightmare. Exactly. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So there was this kind of feeling that like someone somewhere had kind of figured out, hey, yeah, if we're going to run personality driven, hey, these people are speaking directly to an audience and forming this connection. And that's like a vital part of how we monetize. I mean, I hate to think to talk about stuff like that, but it's true.
It's the business we're in.
But it's like these farms popped up, but they also didn't figure out the right way to do this. And most of them are totally out of business because they were paying ridiculous guarantees and premiums to these people. And then their right. YouTube channels wouldn't pop off or whatever. And then it was a huge risk and most of them have folded. And then these corporations haven't figured it out either. I mean, you kind of get, and we've seen it, you know, I won't name names, but we've just seen it happen over and over again at traditional outlets, and they get someone who is a superstar level talent at something, and it only takes a year or two for that to just burn right the fuck out, and then they got to go do something, you know, on their own. Like we've seen it, I think, like 8 times in the past, like 5 years, I feel.
Oh,
like.
Definitely. And that's, you know, that's, you go all the way back to, you know, the 90s and 2000s when I was doing this sort of stuff. Like we, you know, we were made to feel, and I don't know that this was a deliberate act so much as it was just like, maybe it was just the reality how they saw it, but you know,
right.
you're made to feel incredibly replaceable. It was this idea of just right. like, we get resumes from college kids every single day right. that'll do your job for half the money.
Kill to have your job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Like, why aren't you happy? You're playing right. video games all day. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, marketing dude, you clearly don't understand what this job is, but right. thanks. It's been a weird it's a weird line of work. It always has been.
It really is. But reception to your stuff so far has seemed really positive to me. I think I've enjoyed the content obviously so far, but like,
thank you.
How has that transition been to kind of like managing this community kind of on a one-on-one basis?
It's been fun. It's been really awesome. It feels the way it should. It feels, it feels normal. It feels honest. You know, it feels like, okay, this is what I'm selling.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in that, here's where you can pay. And there's no middleman. There's no, you know, there's not a lot of layers, and there probably need to be some layers at some point, you know, just in terms of like, I'm answering customer support for people
person with a family and
and I'm, you know, running multiple streams per week and doing all this different stuff. So
it's been, and
I'm handling all the production on it. So when a video breaks, which I was bitten by some technical bugs, of course, like the week that I started doing this.
Oh yeah, of course.
So it's been like, okay, now I'm like popping open command lines and using FFmpeg to join files together and cutting this. And, you know, it's been fun finding, okay, because I don't have an Adobe license anymore. So it's like, okay, so I'm using all of these awesome open source tools again. I'm kind of, it feels very back to basics in a very fun way, where it's like, nothing I'm doing is, you know, like all this stuff is solve problems. I'm putting up videos and I'm putting up podcasts. Like people do it all the time, but being able to kind of figure out, okay, what's the most efficient way for me to do this alone?
Yeah.
And really just kind of, I think where I'm at right now is just kind of like, I need to bang on this in as many different ways as possible and see where it breaks. And once I see where it breaks, then it's like, okay, do I need to hire someone or you know, can I bring someone else in, or what do I change about a process or whatever to kind of make this go and make it continue to grow.
This is a very, very detailed question, but what are you using for your live transcript stuff? Because that's been a nice part of your streams.
Oh, it's an OBS plugin.
Nice. Okay.
And it is called OBS Captions Plugin.
Okay.
it's on GitHub.
Brilliantly named.
Yeah, from a user named Rat with a Compiler. And
that's good. All right.
Yeah.
No, but that's been nice. I still feel like the industry, if we can call it that, is behind on stuff like that. So it's been nice to have those on your streams.
It was something I originally was just like, this will be goofy because it will get stuff wrong and that will be fun. Sure. And then I was like, oh, actually, like people are genuinely benefiting from this as well. And so it's
better than I expected it. Some of this weird shit that we have to say as people would talk about video games for a living, I mean, it's not bad.
I believe it ships it off to some Google API.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then it comes back and shows up. Yeah, it's been fun.
You you alluded to kind of your longevity in the business. I did some math, and you've been around roughly 7 to 8 times longer than this website has existed. So, I think a lot has changed for the better since, you know, the early mid 90s. I think more diverse voices. I think like labor reporting is in a much better place than it was. But like, what's something that you think we've lost in this industry over the past like 25 years that you kind of lament?
I think that, and this is something that we just saw yesterday with the, or earlier this week, I guess I should say, last week, with the the reaction to the lack of a God of War announcement or the, those sorts of things where as the fan base has grown, I think you're getting a lot of people who think they know a lot more than they do and think that things need to be run a certain way and that they are attempting to impose their will. Like basically ever since Mass Effect 3 happened, ever since the Mass Effect 3 ending thing happened, it feels like we've been on a downward trajectory in terms of the online discourse about games in a social media kind of public setting. And you know, and that's not to say, you know, look, I was getting death threats in the late 90s, you know, like people used to have to email it in. They couldn't write it on Twitter. I think there was a little bit less secrecy back then because the information didn't have as many different ways to travel. No one was walking around with a phone in their pocket all the time. Yeah. And so it was a lot easier to just have a somewhat less guarded conversation with someone making games. People weren't as media trained. And so it just felt a little more like, you know, I could have a conversation with a producer about Midnight Club, I believe it was. But it was just like, you know, he's like, you know, what a part of what a producer does is find creative solutions to problems. So like when we wanted helicopters in the game, we had to set the gravity to just like negative 20. It's a car, but we set the gravity to negative 20 so that it hovers in the air instead of on the ground, or you know, like just like interesting little details like that, that you still can get here and there, but sure. You know, it's, I think there was a lot more of that back then, but there was a lot more. I mean, you talk about like the, yes, of course, diversity, but like the, so when I first started in, you know, let's call it 92-ish, when I first started going to trade shows and stuff like that, it was like cigar chomping sales guys who had no interest in video games. And sometimes it felt like, you know, as I started meeting more and more people from magazines, like they seemed like they were not part of the same, you know, they were not part of the same demographic I was. It was a much older crowd of people that had these jobs then. And the only, the first people I met that seemed like I could identify with and seemed like they genuinely just loved video games was the crew at Game Informer. Andy McNamara was there and Paul and that original crew at Game Informer. They were just like, this is great. We love video games and we love writing about them and all this other stuff. And those were that early meeting for me, like, I think cemented a lot of like, oh, okay. Like, you don't have to just become some soulless suit and just say, well, this Ninja Turtles game is going to burn up the charts. The kids love these turtles and, you know, like all that sort of stuff. But like, that's largely what it was. It just felt like a bunch of business guys.
Yeah.
That had no interest in the actual video games.
Yeah. You still see a stray one of those at these trade shows, which is still very funny to see, but I do think you're right for the most part. I think that's changed a lot. I want to talk about games. Let's talk about games for a second.
Right.
Let's put Elden Ring. Let's take it outside the room and just pet it on the head and say, you've done a great job. Good job, Elden Ring.
Yeah.
Let's look back at the first half of the year. What kind of stands out to you as some of your favorite games that have come out aside from Elden Ring?
It's Tunic. You could leave Elden Ring in the room and I would still say Tunic.
All right. Wow.
I loved Tunic so much, and for a lot of the same reasons why I loved Fez, you know, the way those layers kind of peel back and as they show you more and more of what that game really is. And, Tunic was just, it became an obsession for me until I finished it. I will admit I did eventually kind of look a couple of things up, but it was that sort of thing where it's like, I've half solved this puzzle and I don't feel like writing a bunch of notes right now. So,
So
I'm going to look this part up and go. But yeah, I just the art style, the music, the way they integrate this manual into the gameplay.
It's very cool.
And you're finding these manual pages that are just like every single one is a literal just mind blower. Just like, oh, wow, I can't believe that's what this game is. And then 20 minutes later, it happens again. And you're like, oh, no, are you kidding me? It was just I had an incredible time with Tunic.
Yeah, I thought that was a really fun mechanic when I talked to the developer about it. It does strike me as a very there are folks in younger generations who love that game and eat that up, but that mechanic very specifically about collecting these manual pages, I mean, that just drills so deep into the brains of people who are now, I would say, in their mid-40s to, you know, mid-30s to mid-40s. And I thought it was a really smart move. Like, I want to collect all of those because it is sucking me right back into, a shitty little extra office that my parents set up for the NES and just like flipping through, fucking Mega Man manuals and stuff.
And they nailed the art style of just 100%. It's definitely like it's Legend of Zelda esque, but not super derivative. Mm-hmm. There's just a ton there. It was just so smartly made, and it's hard to go back to because now. So what I did, I finished Tunic, and then I was like, well, I should play Tunic again.
And
because it you know, that's like, oh, well, I can get achievements for it now. I bet I could get those really quickly because I know, but the thing that happened is like, you forget the exact, you learn all these shortcuts that work at any time.
Uh-huh.
And so when you go back into it, you're suddenly breaking sequence in ways that make the game way harder. Where you're way like, I don't remember.
Yeah.
You get in like an hour in and you're like, I don't remember where the shield is anymore.
Uh-huh.
Because I've gone so many different directions. So yeah. It's one of those games that a lot like Fez, I need to not play it for 5 or 6 years and try to forget about it as much as I can.
Yeah.
And then come back to it.
And lose all the post-its or notebooks that you wrote little
right,
shit
yes.
down.
Burn all that stuff and start over. yeah. But that's been the big standout for me this year.
It's been honestly like as slow as the rest of the year, I think kind of looks to some people like this year has been a banger. Honestly, I think there have been a lot of really good games. I think Neon White right now is a very interesting game. I know Ben Esposito a bit. We used to be at Glitch City in LA together. And it's just, I love indie devs that take a successful game like Donut County and then their next thing could not be more different. Like right. I fucking love that.
Yeah.
I
came around on the writing in Neon White. Like at first sure. it was a little much and I was just like, okay. And then it kind of all clicked into place for me. And I'm like, all right, I'm starting to appreciate the kind of dumb characters and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically Himbo Simulator of 2022. Yeah. It's fine. Anything catch your eye this week on the Nintendo Direct? There was I don't get the branding of Nintendo Directs at all. They're like, it's a mini showcase. I'm like, it's 28 minutes and it's packed full of shit that people have been waiting for. Seems right. like kind of a big deal. What kind of caught your eye this week?
In a bad way, I guess. Well, maybe not a bad way is the wrong word, but like something that stuck out is the notion that they're going to remake Pac-Man World. I don't understand. I was there when Pac-Man World came out. No one cared. It came out and it was like, all right, whatever. It was and the idea that they're like, no, we're going to put Pac-Man World back out. I don't understand why that is happening. But the Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection, for as much as some of those filters and some of the stuff about it look bad.
Yeah.
Those are great games. Well, I guess I should say I only played the first two, but sure. I love those games just conceptually. And so, so the idea that people will be able to maybe experience those again, I think is really cool.
I was such a Mega Man head as a kid, but I never played those because I felt like when was that, like the mid 2000s? I think I felt like,
yeah,
I was like, this is not my house. This is not my wife. Like, you know, like about Mega Man and I didn't touch him. And then years later, I was like, man, that was actually probably would have been pretty fucking cool. And now I've got a chance to kind of play him. So I'm excited to get my hands on him. I've heard from many people who played those games that they're like, you do not need to play all 10 of these games.
No, definitely not.
which kind of makes it funny that they're packaging them this way, which is odd because if you do a physical package, it packs all 10 together. But if it's digital, they basically split it in this weird way, which I don't understand.
Like, was it like the first three and then four, and five, then and
four,
six?
Four, five, and six. And three, four, five, and six have two versions like Pokemon. So,
right.
Odd package, but I'm excited about, you know, Capcom continuing to kind of have these re-releases. That was a bit hit or miss, but like some of them have been nice. So,
yeah. And I think these games, I think, they may find a much larger audience this time around because of that kind of deck building, kind of card based. Like the gameplay in these games feels like it's at least relatively contemporary. I feel like we're seeing a lot of games these days that are like trying to kind of capture some of that gameplay or some of that stuff these days. So the idea that they're coming back out and you know, maybe this will lead to them making a new one, which would be potentially nice. We'll see. Because I think that style of gameplay is very hot right now.
Yeah, it's very hot right now. Yeah.
And then they announced, they showed the kind of the other half of the Sonic Frontiers embargo.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that looking to you?
I think it looks bad. I don't know. Before Sonic Frontiers, I think, got formally announced, someone I know hit me up and said, hey, I just saw a little bit of Sonic Frontiers. and it looks kind of cool. There's kind of a Shadow of the Colossus vibe, kind of open world vibe thing. And I'm like, okay, all right, well, that sounds different. And then that first trailer hit and people just started dumping on it. And then I got to see it for myself at Keeley's thing a few weeks ago. And yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm not my relationship with the Sonic franchise is very troubled. And
yeah, same.
I'm straightening it out in a lot of ways because I've come to the realization that all those games are actually bad.
You are among friends, at least on this call. Yeah. I've never been a Sonic person. I think I have some nostalgia for the original Sonic Adventure just because I have like mm-hmm. there is a Dreamcast just permanently plugged into the back of my head, you know, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I'm nostalgic for that, but like, I don't think these games are good and I don't think they ever have been.
No, that first level of Sonic Adventure was at least pretty. But even then, I was like, I don't want to play this. This is an awful, awful video game. But yeah, this open zone thing they're talking about. And then so the reveal that they had with this kind of second hit was like, oh, by the way, there's traditional 3D Sonic levels in here.
Yeah.
And they look
more Sonic like, I guess, you know, so it's like,
yes,
you know, I think the funniest part about the reaction to Sonic Frontiers is, you know, everyone's like, ooh, open world Sonic, what a cool idea. And then they show it to us and are like, no, not like this. Like, you took all the wrong lessons from fucking Breath of the Wild. Like, no, this sucks. Like, God, we just want the old Sonic back. And then we saw kind of the old Sonic stuff. And I still feel like people are like, ah, fuck, not like this either. Holy shit. Right. You know, so I don't know what this game could do to save itself at this point.
And I can't envy anyone charged with trying to make a new Sonic the Hedgehog game, whether it's 2D, 3D, anything. Like, the fan expectations are so tortured and twisted at this point. Like, I don't think that crowd could ever be truly satisfied with anything. And so I guess I can at least fall back on, at least Sonic Frontiers open world stuff is different from the stuff they have done before. I don't think it's, I don't know that it's going to be good. In fact, pretty sure it's not going to be, but at least it's something else. At least they're going to try to do something else.
I mean, I almost think Sega at this point, I mean, this is my hot take. They should do what Square Enix is doing with Yoshida and just put him on everything. Hey, what does this game need? It needs Yoshida. Take someone from the fucking Yakuza series or something that's working for Sega and just be like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, what can we do with Sonic that at least gets new people on board and actually satisfies our I'll say passionate fan base. But I don't know what they could do. It's one of the trickiest little thought experiments in games is like how do you do Sonic? Because
okay, how about we give it to the Persona team and just have them make a Persona game, but why with not? The Sonic, like I mean, want to S-Link with Big the Cat.
I mean, like of all the wild shit that they've done, and I'm not saying this game was particularly good because it wasn't, but it's like, you know, the BioWare thing they did. I'm like, think outside the box a little bit. Like, think, you know, do something. Like, because I think now a move like that might be more well received and the game might be better, which is definitely important. But yeah, I mean, something, I feel like something has to be done. But you know what? That fan base seems to just eat up whatever.
And they're about to, you know, well, I guess they already have a different fan base that just thinks of Sonic as a movie franchise and maybe doesn't even care about the games.
Yeah, so maybe not. Yeah,
maybe that writes them a weird blank check to where they can come back around and be like, okay, based on the movie, now we've got this game. Or yeah, I don't know.
Chili dogs. How are you feeling that Street Fighter VI is shaping up?
I am very excited about it. That was another game, another team that I definitely would not envy in terms of like, what do you do to make a Street Fighter in this day and age? I feel like Street Fighter V missed the mark in so many different ways.
Yep. At launch and post launch. I mean, just definitely, pretty much the whole time. Yeah.
And that's a big thing. I think a lot about the way games often focus on esports first and how detrimental that can be to like a wider fan base,
of course,
and all of that sort of stuff. And so Street Fighter VI just feels like it has a lot of bells and whistles that will attract that larger audience. Of course, they're trying to do some stuff with the controls to make it a little bit more appealing there. And I think the time is right for that. That's something that I definitely would have rebelled against 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
but I think it makes a lot more sense these days. I love the look of it. I think it plays really well. It's very deliberately paced. Like, it's a much slower feeling game.
Exactly, like, the word I used when Imran shot us like the raw footage from the floor. Like,
yeah,
I was watching 15 minutes of that. I was like, this looks so deliberate. And like, I know people are going to say slow. I know, but I'm like, this to my eyes looks like a more fun and strategic and interesting experience to me.
Yeah. It's chunky. Like, the hits feel menacing. Weighty. Like, you know, you're just like, oh yeah, there's an absolute weight to those attacks that I think helps kind of sell the whole thing a little bit more visually.
Yeah.
I think this, like, systems wise, in terms of how they're handling different meters and management of those resources, like, that all sounds really interesting. I'll have to wait and see until the game's actually out, because I remember seeing Street Fighter V for the first time before it was out and looking at all the V triggers, all the different meters and stuff, and I'm like, wow, this is cool. This is so much better than Street Fighter IV.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, no.
Bummer. But, yeah. It was like a half step and also a step back, I feel like. So definitely excited for Street Fighter VI. And I'm a sucker for Final Fight references. It's one of the only things you can shoehorn into a game, and I'd be like, okay, like, I'm there for more Mad Gear Gang stuff. So I'm very interested to see what that single player experience is like, because that looks pretty buck wild. So
I'm excited. Definitely. And just the idea that they're showing it now, and when you think about Street Fighter V launching without a single player story and all this other stuff,
If you
want to have a mainstream fighting game that breaks out of that kind of esports fighting game community kind of mold, that's a great place to start. It works so well for Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Like, their story modes are so well received every time that I think it's just crazy that they went that route, but they seem to be doing better this time.
I mean, who knows how the game lands? I mean, I'm optimistic for it, but it's also like they have taken the playbook of what to do with kind of a PR rollout, and like, they've done everything right so far. So it's like, it's been pretty cool to see that. What's maybe an under the radar game you're looking forward to the fall? It's kind of a weird year. There's like less giant AAA stuff, I feel like, coming out this year, but what are you looking forward to?
Gosh, I don't know that I have an immediate answer to that question.
Yeah, that's weird, huh?
Yeah, that is, you know, there's, in terms of big games and stuff like, you know, I am hopeful that Call of Duty kind of gets back on track this year.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff, because they've had a couple of terrible years.
That demo they showed looked honestly pretty cool. I mean, that hasn't been my bag for a long time, but
yeah.
You know, it hasn't been my thing since probably the original Modern Warfare 2, which is such a fucked up sentence to say. So I'm like, yeah, they might have gotten me this year, maybe. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think, you know, when they did that first Modern Warfare reboot, that they overhauled a lot of what that game needed, and so I'm kind of hopeful that they'll. It's a shame in a weird way that they kind of have to do that again, but the last couple of years have really fumbled it. But I guess, you know, I am looking forward to the Klonoa re-release. Klonoa is incredible. Always was. I'm excited that more people will get to see that game.
For sure.
Those games, because they're great. I'm hopeful that Saints Row ends up coming out right.
We have some question marks here at Fan Byte about whether that's going to come out right, but it's like, they showed that creation suite, like, they showed that off early. That feels like a good step, I think. So
We talk about the Mass Effect effect, the Mass Effect 3 effect and stuff. I feel like that character creator is another bad example of like fan base raging over something that is obviously not a real problem, and them going like, all right, fine, we'll put a team on the character creator and put that out early so you can see that you can make whatever you want. Jesus, what is wrong with you people? Like, it's just insane. If the Callisto Protocol makes it out this year, I guess that's the other kind of preface, right? Is like, what's actually gonna make it.
Yeah, I think it's so funny. I mean, listen, I'm gonna pick up both and probably love both, but it is very funny that they're beating the Dead Space remake by about 6 weeks.
Yeah,
it's very, very funny. But yeah, that was very, very good looking game. Very creepy body horror stuff. So yeah, mm-hmm. All the way up to the fucking health bar on the back of the neck. I was like, okay, you definitely are in your bag. So
yeah. They know the game that they're making. They know right up to the legal line of what game they can can make on that front before. See, if only they had said it in the PUBG universe. I can't believe they backed away from that.
I know.
The rich and deep player unknowns battlegrounds universe.
So layered, yeah.
I feel like that's like why take it out of that? Like they had to get out there and announce like, oh, it's no longer part of the PUBG universe. It doesn't matter. Like, there is no PUBG universe. I know they tried to do like some storyline about why the battlegrounds exists, mm-hmm. but like, come on.
Yeah. 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 They saw Fortnite popping off. They're like, well, we have to have some sort of meta explanation for this stuff. I was like, y'all really don't. You really don't.
Absolutely. Just hit play and shoot people. It'll work out.
It'll be totally fine. I'm going to start asking this question to literally everybody that appears on the show until this game comes out. Can you explain to me what Overwatch 2 is in a minute or less?
It's a increasingly desperate attempt to get people to care about Overwatch again, because all of the changes they've made with Overwatch 1 over the past year plus 5 years, whatever, however long it's been, have continually pushed away the average player in favor of an esports focused crowd. And even that esports focused crowd is starting to get a little bit fed up with the whole thing. So they've got to punch whatever, break emergency glass, whatever they can. And so they're like, oh, I don't know. Well, also, everything here's on fire, so we have to split it into two games now. And so now Overwatch 2 is technically just a patch for Overwatch 1.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you. That's a great one. That'll go in the pantheon. At the end of the year, we'll probably come out with a standalone episode that's just all of those stitched together. I would be a fool not to ask you about professional wrestling before
we
part.
Yes.
AEW has been this kind of like thing that has kind of revived my kind of love for this thing that I think I was kind of falling out of love with.
Same here.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, just how has that changed your relationship with this thing that we both like quite a bit?
It's been so refreshing and exciting to watch, AEW. And I still watch WWE.
Yeah.
Because I'm in front of a monitor when those shows are on. So it's like, I put them on and so I am still consuming way too much wrestling, but recently I made the decision of like, you know what? It's time that I start watching AEW Dark and Dark Elevation.
That shit hits.
And yes,
it's good.
I'd been skipping that stuff and getting increasingly angry about the lack of Dark Order on television and all that stuff. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to start watching Dark. I'm going to get a VPN. In fact, I'm just going to sign up for AEW Plus and watch it all there. And do all of that stuff. And yeah, it's, you know, I don't think that everything they're doing is, you know, is gangbusters. I think there's a lot of stuff that they could improve on, but it's just, they've earned so much rope. They've earned like so much leeway in terms of like, I am willing to go with them on an adventure and hope and I trust that they will make it work out in the end. I think the Forbidden Door pay-per-view ended up, I think, proving that in a lot of ways, because obviously in the run-up to that, all the injuries, all the planned matches, just a huge disaster. You're like, well, this show's going to be terrible. It's like, what is even happening?
What do they have? Right.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, wait, like almost like the whole, I'm going to say the first two-thirds of that pay-per-view were untouchable. Yeah. And then at the end,
kind of fell apart at the end a little bit. Yeah. I mean, but part of that was whatever happened to Adam Cole, which seemed strange, but, yeah, I do think I will say the one thing AEW is doing that I think they could improve, those pay-per-views are too long. They're taking like the wrong lessons from WWE. You know, WWE has been kind of increasing the length of their majors for a few years. And by the time you get to the main event or whatever, you're gassed. And you know, like people aren't cheering for Kazuchika Okada's drop kicks. I was like, who the fuck? Like, it's the most picture perfect drop kick in the history of the business. And y'all are quieter than the Japanese crowd that usually sees this. And like, and that's
and
just because
laws that prevent them from making noise.
Yeah. Right. But it's just because like everyone's gassed by, you know, 3.5 hours in.
Yeah. There's a certain amount of show pacing that, especially I think Forbidden Door is maybe an anomaly in that sense.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe
it felt like from a pacing perspective, and this is something WWE has always been really good at for better or worse, is that like, the lift me up match, the popcorn match, whatever you want to call it. They like, okay, we're going to put this match in between these two bangers so that you can at least like relax and then get back up for the next one. Whereas Forbidden Door just kind of didn't have that because, you know, most of the matches mattered in meaningful ways. So I think some of that's because they just had to cram so much onto that card from the two organizations and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, the last pure like regular AEW show was definitely too long.
Yeah, it was super long. I mean, it's something everyone should realize. You don't have to do it. I mean, AEW is so good at just putting a lot of content just on TV and on YouTube every week. It's like not all of it has to fit on.
I wonder if some of it is, you know, I wonder if they ever feel the pressure because they're selling pay-per-views and not a network subscription if this is a $50 show, we need to make sure it's crazy because our closest competitor is putting these out
on Peacock.
Yeah, exactly. So
you could watch The Office right after you watch Roman Reigns beat someone for the 800th time. I mean, that is a pretty big difference.
It's been great having this alternative out there, and it feels even weird to call them an alternative after 3 years. You know, it feels like they are the main thing I'm interested in.
Yeah,
those storylines, those characters. And so I think a lot of people are feeling this as well. It's that idea of just like, I like seeing these WWE guys come in and get a new kind of lease on life, but at the same time, I miss some of the characters that are seemingly falling through the cracks. Like I mentioned,
Dark Order is,
you know, Sunny Kiss.
They're letting a lot of contracts lapse with Dark Order, which is a bummer. So that faction's getting smaller and kind of weirder and more fractured and more less identity, I feel like. So yeah, that's been kind of a bummer.
Yeah. And so I guess like that's been my beef with it. I think it's why the Hangman and CM Punk angle worked for me at the end, because as much as it was a weird kind of out of nowhere turn on Hangman's part to start saying he's defending the company from people like CM Punk, like there was a part of me that was like, no, it needs defending. Like, and I like CM Punk a lot and like seeing him in these storylines, but there's a part of me that just, I want to see this young talent. I want to see these fresh faces get more time on television and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, that's now that I'm watching Dark and Dark Elevation, and this is literally the first week I finally realized like, I just need to start doing this. I'm feeling a lot better about all of it. They sure do a bad job of, you know, I'm not that maintaining a YouTube channel is easy,
no,
but especially when they're putting up as much different stuff as they are on the AEW channel, but they don't do a good job of archiving Dark and Dark Elevation onto good playlists and all the other stuff. Like there's so much more that they could be doing.
Yeah.
And also like storyline stuff. Like I feel like it's really only been over the last, let's say, 7-ish years that I've begun to appreciate the physicality of a wrestling match.
Sure.
In a real way. Like normally for me, it was like a reverse porn thing where it's like, I just want to see the storylines and the finishes.
Yeah.
And whatever.
And the rest is whatever. Sure.
Yeah. But now I'm definitely appreciating a lot more of that now that I'm just watching better wrestling in some cases. But I think that they could be doing more storyline stuff. The thing, you know, Vince Russo gets beat up a lot and he deserves a lot of it.
He does.
But one of the things that he is said to have done that I at least think about and go, yeah, is like he tried to have every match matter, tried to have everyone in some kind of storyline.
Yes.
Most of the storylines were bad, but at least there was something. It wasn't just, you know, and I think even matches on Dynamite sometimes feel like they're like, here's a cold match. Here's a match. It's you're excited because it's a matchup you haven't seen and you're like, wow, cool. But you're like, man, they could have saved this. They could have built this up a better. They could have had these characters in some kind of storyline. I think the women especially suffer. That's across all of wrestling. Like, I just feel like there have not been great storylines for women in WWE either.
No, there haven't. That's definitely an area they could improve on. I agree. They're in this kind of weird in-between period. I remember when I feel like in like the mid-90s WCW, they were kind of in that like, these are cold matches. You're just excited to see it's WCW Saturday night. Arn Anderson's going to wrestle Tom Zink for no fucking reason. You know, like,
yeah,
that's fine. Like, I enjoyed seeing that stuff. And like, to some extent, you have to kind of lean into the sport of it, quote unquote.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, I get why they do that, but I do feel like they have a really good sense of continuity at AEW, but they don't always remind you of it, you know, at every single corner, which is something I think they could definitely improve. But you know, the power of being a billionaire with good taste, you know, like that's right. who knew, yeah. Right? Like,
yeah,
we've been watching a billionaire with bad taste do this for a long time. And, you don't have to give it to billionaires. I'm not saying that, but it's like, like you don't have to
I think that's the fan bite slogan. It's like, these billionaires, you really got to hand it to them.
You got to really hand it to the billionaires. That is the fan bite way. But it's like, it is kind of interesting. It's like, you got to just admit at some point, it's like, all right, Tony Khan, like, I guess one of the good ones. I don't know, you know. So
maybe, you know, at least in this specific
way,
he is enabling content that I am
enjoying,
really loving. I think he gets a weird rap. You know, like people are criticizing his hugs and calling him Cocaine Tony and Money Mark and all this other stuff. And none of that. He just seems really excited about what he's doing.
He does. He does. Like, yeah. I mean, his Twitter account is the best advertisement for his dealer in the world. But yeah, like he's just an excitable little guy. Like, I don't know. So
he's just a little freaky man that loves wrestling. Freak.
Yeah.
And I love wrestling too. Yeah. And so I feel like I could hang out with that dude.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to let you go. Enjoy the rest of your, I'm assuming busy Friday. The weekend.
I got about 10 minutes here and then I'm going to start streaming.
Perfect. That's awesome.
That's how it goes.
That's how it goes around here. What you got to plug? Plug away.
Oh, well, it's, you know, I've been really dumb about unifying behind a single URL, and all that sort of stuff. I managed to break my email trying to do that the other night. But,
perfect.
You can go to patreon.com/Jeff Gerstmann for
that's
that.
What, that's with two N's. You can't speed run. N's. Can't speed run Gerstmann and miss the second N. You got to get that second N in there.
No, you can maybe go to jeff.zone and that's my Tumblr, and that's not going to have any good links to where I'm at either, but at least it'll tell you how to spell my name. You know, you can find me on co-host. I'm over on co-host at Jeff Gerstmann. Got that co-host plus, not effing around.
Hell yeah. That's exciting. So, I know a lot of folks waiting for an invite there, but
The Jeff Gerstmann Hall of Fame just went up for people that are signed up to Patreon. That's my monthly thing. And we're looking at doing more stuff that kind of mines some of the stuff I saw in the 90s, in the early 90s, going through some of these cigar chomping weirdos and, you know, people in limos with Marina Sirtis because they're promoting the Star Trek Next Generation game and all this other weird stuff from back then. I'm looking to produce some more content around that.
You're talking Rambo on that first one. So, you should go check that out, folks, for patrons. It's a good little look at a weird game that I didn't know anything about. But please go do that. Check out Jeff's stuff. And thank you so much for hanging out. This is
anytime,
awesome.
John. No, this is great. Love doing it.
This was super cool. All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks again to Jeff Gerstmann. That was such a fun conversation. We alluded to games that are coming out in the next, you know, few months, but what about this week? It's a holiday week. I mean, this week we saw Cuphead's last DLC. We saw Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak. Like, these are big releases. I'm hyping that up because this week is a little bit different. It's just, you know, it's just not as busy. But there's still some stuff you should know about. On July 7th, a game called Matchpoint is coming out for PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. If you want to get your tennis on, He can play Match Point. Arcade Again is coming to PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC on July 8th. Also on July 8th is Madison. It is a horror game coming to PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Nintendo Switch, and PC. And then finally on July 8th, we have Klonoa Fantasy Reverie Series. Yep, Klonoa's back, baby. Jeff Gerstmann just talked about that game. It's coming out on PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. So pretty much no matter what you got, you can check out Klonoa. That's super exciting. What about Xbox Game Pass? We do know some details about what's coming in July. Far Cry 5 is already there. That got on the service on July 1st. And there's Last Call BBS that's coming on July 5th. Match Point Tennis, which we just talked about, July 7th. Escape Academy is on July 14th. Expect some coverage on the site for that. As Dusk Falls, July 19th, in Immortality. Yes, that's Sam Barlow's new joint coming on July 26th. Super exciting. Besides that, there's the last two episodes of Stranger Things are officially out on Netflix. The last two, at least in the fourth season. There will be a fifth and final season. So if you want to know what happened to those darn kids in the Upside Down, you should check those out. I think it's like 4 hours of content. 2 episodes. 4 hours. Goodness gracious. That's it for this week's new stuff. I'm looking forward to Klonoa. That's what I'm going to load that on my Switch. I think that's a good place for him. That is going to do it for this week's show. I definitely want to thank my guest, Jeff Gerstmann, for stopping by and having such a lovely conversation. It was so great to have him finally appear on a Fanbyte property, and he's welcome back anytime. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff Gerstmann. That is JeffGerstmann. Don't forget that second N. And also, like you said, you can find him at Patreon/Jeff Gerstmann. He is running his own podcast now. He's got streams. It's a cool deal. So if you want to see the continued adventures of Jeff Gerstmann, you can check him out there. Paul Tamayo, my excellent producer, can be found at Paulimayo. Thank you so much, Paul. All of our podcasts can be found at fanbyte.com/podcasts. If you want to track me down on Twitter, you can do so at Floppy Adult. I run a stream every Tuesday morning called Tuesday Morning the Show. It's kind of a companion piece for this. This past week, we watched the Nintendo Direct and we talked about it. And it was a lot of fun. So twitch.tv/fanbyte every Tuesday morning at 10:30 a.m. Eastern. It's a good way to spend your Tuesday. We'll not be on this week because we are off on Independence Day and the day afterward. And then I'm going to be just basically absent from podcasts for the week because I'm going to a corporate retreat. We don't totally have a plan figured out for what to do with this show yet, but something will appear in the feed. Don't you worry. And things will be totally back to normal in a couple weeks. And until then, you're welcome.